Hey everybody, welcome to the Constitutional Warrior, formerly known as the Conservative Warrior. Hey everybody, again, this is the Constitutional Warrior, and I'm going to go over some crazy things that happened this week, especially on Wednesday this week, January the 6th. You know, January 6th was supposed to be the day where the joint session of Congress was to certify the Electoral College votes from the November 3rd election. And it turned into a day that, well, we won't forget for a long time. Going into January 6th and into that joint session of Congress, we all knew that House Republicans and also some Senate Republicans were going to object to the electoral count votes for Arizona, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Michigan. We all knew this, right? And of course, it was going to be a legal objection, you know, outlined in the Constitution, also 3 U.S.C. Section 15, or the Electoral Count Act. So it wasn't something that, you know, was inciting any type of coup or anything that the mainstream media is trying to portray. It was actually a legal and legitimate process that they were following. But you know how that goes. But anyways, January 6th took our nation, especially politically, into a crux in a road. You know, I wouldn't say a fork because you have paths. Crux was like, oh, we really don't know which way to go. But when Congress was voting to certify and they were debating the Arizona objection, that was more of a pitiful moment in our constitutional republic, especially in modern history, because that drove the last nail into the coffin. And I believe at that point in time, the United States of America began to flatline. And it became apparent that mob rule was a norm. It was a norm in modern history, or modern-day politics. You know, given the fact that, you know, things have really escalated, this was, I guess, the point where everything just blew up, you know? And when the mob of people stormed the United States Capitol, you know, I'm going to call it what it is. It was a deliberate act of insurrection and sedition, point blank. You know, they may be upset, they may be angry. I share some of their anger, because I want to know what exactly happened in the election. But at the same time, what they did was unacceptable. They crossed the line from protesting and exercising their First Amendment right to sedition and insurrection. Although, you know, there has been speculations and people circulating that, you know, members of Antifa were the ones who were inciting most of the, or part of the riots in the Capitol. But regardless of who was participating in those activities in the Capitol, it's just a disdain on America itself and all those who had sacrificed their lives to afford everyone in this country the American dream. A constitutional republic that allows our representation and our voices to be heard. But at the same time, and I want to be very clear, that in my opinion, there is no difference between those who stormed the Capitol, regardless if they were Antifa or, you know, Trump supporters. There's no difference between them and BLM and Antifa, who were burning down cities across the country this past summer. They are the same. On the same plane, on the same level, and on the same level discussed. The only difference between Antifa and BLM is the fact that they are on polar opposites of the political spectrum. With BLM and Antifa being on the far, far left, and also Trump supporters being on the far, far, far right. So I want to make that clear. Regardless of what they believe to have happened, it didn't give them the right to do what they did. Now we have five people dead, several people injured for what? And nothing has changed because on January 20th, Joseph R. Biden is going to be inaugurated as the 46th president of the United States, whether we like it or not, whether there were some improprieties, unfortunately, this is the reality. Since last summer, the United States aggressively progressed in falling into the laps of the progressivism and communist ideology of the Democratic Party. You know, people on the on the right, Republicans or what have you, were worried about socialism. You know, radical left in America literally coined the term "hold my beer" and skipped that and went fast forward into communism because that's what they've done with, you know, in California and Michigan, and now, you know, with the big tech companies and media, you know, doing what they do in censoring and canceling people. So I think they went fast forward. In doing so, Americans have been pinned to be choosing between the radical left and the radical right, and leaving everyone in the middle to witness and bear ca the ca catastrophic consequences of this mob rule. And this is an egregious overtaking, right, by both radical left and right ideologues, having put that nail in the heart of American principles, right? They put a nail in the heart of American principles. And that, like I said, accelerated since last summer. Our American principles, you know, of natural rights of human beings being pre-existent of any government or political party or ideology, the equality of all humans before the law and in the rights that pre-exist government and politics. And that the government only exists to protect that those latter two. They're not there to tell us what, how to live our life, what to do in our lives, or what we or when to do things in our lives. That's not the government's role. Whether you look at the far left or the far right, the one thing they do have in common is that they want to use the government to eliminate their political opponents, and that has been very apparent in modern history. Whether it be Obama and using the IRS to go over conservative nonprofits, going after his opponents using the DOJ, CIA, plausible because both extreme spectrums of this political battle, this political civil war, whether it be far left, far right, they're both driven by hate and they're both driven by evil, and I believe they would probably do anything to make the other side look bad to include impersonating them and doing egregious things. Many people have said that we're on the brink of a civil war, but I would respond to that statement with, we're already in a civil war, and it's already begun. It's been a cultural civil war that we've been battling for decades here in the United States, and now we are seeing the political war or civil war now starting to emerge even more. And I think because that the hard and tough-minded tolerance for the rights of others that Americans had has completely gone out the window. It nearly no longer exists in this country. The social institutions have been perverted and bastardized by the radical left. And yeah, let's be honest, institutions like the media and higher education, education institutions have been perverted by the left for decades. Let's just be honest with it, because those are the ones who control those institutions. Therefore, that result, it creates a distrust among people. And that is pretty much sadly where we're at in America. And you know, and lastly, the most important, the defense of liberty has gone out the window as well. Individual liberty, the cherishing of individual liberty has been replaced by collective privileges, collective protections, intersectionality, privileges that certain groups receive and get, that leads to leftist pushing taglines like white privilege, and accusing people of being conspiracy theorists, and that leads right to the push and scare of communism arising. You know, we see socialism rise, in the policies and platforms of the Democrats, but communism, you know, rising that from the right, from the guys on the right. You know, with the unfortunate release of the coronavirus this past year, the resulting pandemic only was a catalyst that those who want to control you, which is, you know, the people who make politics their career, right? It gave them the outlet to be able to limit people's liberties, you know, and people, unfortunately, from the past, you know, almost a year, were willing to forfeit their liberties out of fear. Granted that this virus, it was novel, it was new, and instead of holding our government accountable in the sense of developing a vaccine, therapies to treat this novel virus, to research it, it allowed the governments from the municipal, county, state, and federal levels to eliminate personal freedoms and liberties in the quote-unquote greater good. And if you didn't comply or if you dissented, you were shamed, shunned, and canceled. I shouldn't say you were. You are shamed, shunned, and canceled. That's just a fact. But it didn't strengthen the resolve and preparedness of our nation against this novel virus from Wuhan. It only accelerated, you know, the leftists going from pushing soft socialism to their communist, you know, approaches, like in California and Michigan with the comply or else rule, you know, the comply or else, you know, threats and approach that they've taken, cutting off people's utilities, fining people, you know, taking away rights of people, jailing people for not wearing masks, utilizing the arms of the mainstream media and social media also to perpetuate their tyrannical ruling and governance approaches. This further intensifies tribal rule, you know, tribal alliances within the left and progressive ranks to push this narrative. Rather than uniting with each other in order for a common goal of protecting everyone from this thing, it was deflected by these political figures. Now when we talk about unity culturally now, right, that's all we do is talk. It's just talk when we talk about unity. It's nothing more than virtual signaling. There's no genuinity, or is that a word? But anyways, there's no genuine want to unite. That's what I wanted to say. President-elect Biden called for unity. I get it. Good message. He should say that. He should tell people you should unite. Got it. But at the same time, it's coming from a person who has a very inconsistent history of unity, of inconsistent messages, whether no matter what topic. So taking something from him is like taking something from a grain of salt. Do I believe that the left wants unity? Absolutely not. And you could tell by the acts, you know, that Nancy Pelosi, Rep Omar, other congressional Democrats, when they're trying to push, you know, the 25th Amendment to be invoked and the impeachment in the last 10 days of the Trump presidency, notwithstanding the amount of money it would take to pursue the impeachment, but setting aside all the other pressing matters, the more important things related to the the virus and the economic impacts the Americans have had since then, you're putting all that aside, putting the government on hold so you could push this articles of impeachment so the Senate can have a trial to convict or not convict President Trump for a second time. It's a waste of money. It's 10 days left. The dude has 10 days left. It's let him go. Biden's going to come in. But this has nothing to do with justice. It absolutely has nothing to do with justice because what they're trying to do is eliminate any ounce of obstacle Trump will have for them in the future. And they're trying to erase Trump, period, because, like, Representative Joaquin Castro, one of the biggest sellouts of, you know, from San Antonio, you know, introduced a bill to prevent any federal building to be named after Trump. So they're trying to erase him like they erased these national monuments across the country this year. So it's not about justice. They're wasting people's money. They're wasting people's time. And they are not focusing on what they need to do. So where does this leave the political landscape in America? It forcibly makes people pick between, you know, the far left, far right. It also forces us back into the status quo before 2016, where Democrats continue to do what they're doing now, and which is business as usual, and Republicans begin to cower again and become apologists again. They apologize for everything, therefore escalating a unilateral return of what Americans disdain the most, and which is the reason why Trump was elected. The elitist and the elitism in Washington is trying to return itself back to power. You saw that in full display when Mitch McConnell deliberately blocked the increase of COVID relief from $600 to $2,000, especially when Trump was trying to push for the increase into $2,000. This ultimately led to two pivotal things. This ultimately led to the loss of two senatorial seats for the GOP in Georgia. I guarantee you that is one of the reasons why Georgians voted for the Democratic candidates versus the incumbents. Aside, you know, Trump's rhetoric and against the officials in the state of Georgia, but I guarantee you that's one of the biggest reasons why it became a referendum against the Republican Party and Trump in the runoff election in Georgia. And Mitch McConnell really screwed himself and his majority in the Senate by blocking the vote to increase the relief from $600 to $2,000. But did he do it in haste? I doubt it. I believe he did it because he's trying to regain him or reestablish himself as the person who's in charge of the Republican Party. This is what I believe, at least in my opinion, drives and has driven and is driving the dominance of the two-party oligarchy. Each side demonizes each other, but in bed behind closed doors, they scratch each other's backs. Point and simple. And I think that's the reason why Republicans and Democrats across the country block third-party candidates and third-party ballots from being on the ballot and make it very extremely hard to have ballot access because they want to keep that oligarchy going between each other. And I think that is one of the root causes of the problems in the United States, especially politically and in reality. Those in Congress, regardless of them being a Republican or Democrat, they both deflect and punt responsibility. The past 4 years, Democrats blamed President Trump and did nothing in neither chamber to try to accomplish their grievances that they have or saying needs to be done. They didn't do anything. They didn't legislate. But on the same token, Republicans did the same thing for 8 years when President Obama was president. They complained, they grieved, they cried, woof, and they did nothing, even when they had the majority in Congress during Trump's first few years. They did nothing. They didn't repeal Obamacare, and they didn't fix it. So they play the same game. But in order to remedy this corruption that we see in Washington, D.C., I think we as states across the country need to force a constitutional convention in accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution to ratify the 28th Amendment, to ratify a 28th Amendment of our Constitution. And I think that that amendment should impose term limits on those who are elected to the House of Representatives and the United States Senate, further removing their ability to pass their own raises to their compensation. Any raises they receive in compensation should be approved by the people of the United States. I believe that should be the 28th Amendment of our Constitution. And I believe this is the way forward in taking those steps and regaining our nation back away from those political elites and those swamp rats in Washington, and restoring our constitutional republic. And currently our nation is on life support and barely hanging on to dear life, I see. And if we, and especially if we keep going the way we're going. And this is going to be, and this, all this is, all this, what's going on right now is being watched by the world, and we are truly the only free nation on earth. And if the United States falls, you know, I feel there's, you know, no hope in sight. But I will pray and I hope that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and I hope that we can come on the other side as a united nation and move forward and keep going as a prosperous American people. But we shall see. Until next time, I wish everyone Godspeed, and keep your fingers crossed. Keep your prayers going for our great nation. I will see you guys next time.